Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
I marvel that in a matter of hours, you can be on one side of the country or another, or as Chris last week was, internationally. Air travel, when it's on time, is great.
Fantastic. Makes things a lot easier, except even I haven't had to do the whole passport thing ever since I was like 5 years old going internationally. So that was a unique experience.
I would think it would be. I'm glad to see you, Chris. It's been a while since you and I have worked together. You were gone in Jamaica, and then I, towards the end of your Jamaica time, took off to Southern California, went to Petco Park, saw a couple of Giants-Padres games, both very entertaining, both very poorly played. Neither team looks like they're going anywhere fast, and then had a chance to go to the Wild Animal Park and Disneyland for the first time since the late 80s.
Yeah, so we saw some of the pictures here, and we were talking about some of the pictures because during Idaho Sports Talk, I think some of them came up on your Facebook page, and it was something about a Jungle Cruise.
Yes.
What was going on with the Jungle Cruise?
Well, we went on the Jungle Cruise, just one of the great rides at Disneyland, and I took a picture of hippos coming out of the water. I don't know why I decided to post it. You couldn't really take photos on the roller coaster ride because I could just see myself. First of all, I'm holding on for dear life and clutching very, very strongly on things like Thunder Mountain Railroad or some of the other roller coastery type rides. So you can't have your camera out taking pictures of that.
Ah.
So, and they really frown on it at places like Pirates of the Caribbean or the Haunted House. We had a voice of God come down when somebody's trying to take a picture at Pirates of the Caribbean. No flash photography.
I mean, they should learn at this point. This is 2017, man. Everybody's trying to live their life on the gram. So you got to have the phones out. But I guess they want to keep it unique. I understand it. Now, I proved myself ignorant once again when I was talking about hippos on the show. Because I didn't even know hippos were necessarily real. Like, were they real hippos? Like hippopotamus?
The ones on the Jungle Cruise?
Yeah.
No, they were animatronic
okay,
hippos.
Okay, good. They're not real hippos.
Those hippos were not real hippos.
Okay, good. So at least I wasn't crazy in the fact that maybe, just maybe, they might be fake. But anyway, they live in the water. They don't live in the water. I learned that they can be in the water,
yes,
but they don't exactly live
in the
water.
They have to breathe, so they don't live in the water.
Okay.
They can hold their breath for a long, long time.
It's just funny the things that come up on the show. I was like, when it comes to animals and their habitats, like I must have skipped all those classes and that part of science. I didn't open those textbooks. I know nothing about animals. I am the worst person when it comes to animals on this show.
Well, then the picture, we were towards the end of the day at the Wild Animal Park. We come to the tiger exhibit. And some of the animals moved through the day, and others, like the lions, just slept the whole time we saw them. But this tiger decided to wake up and growl and paced right in front of us, back and forth, back and forth. And there was just a glass. We were closer to the tiger than I am to fish right now. Tiger looked hungrier than fish, by the way.
Back.
Fish just ate lunch.
Now, I thought the only tigers that you saw on your trips were Miguel Cabrera and J.D. Martinez, although he's not there anymore.
No. Some of the tigers are, I guess those tigers might be, what do they say, what was the word?
Hibernating?
No, well, the tigers have hibernated most of the season. No, when they're kind of becoming extinct.
Oh, okay. They're becoming extinct. That's a good
they're
word.
They're rare? No. What
endangered?
Endangered, that's it. J.D. Martinez was endangered. We'll see who else in the Tigers is endangered as the trade deadline comes out. That was the word I was looking for. Thanks.
Hey, I know something about animals. I know what it's called when they're about to go away. So I'm going to crown myself right now.
We're now in the middle of August. Next week, we've got Mountain West Media Days coming up Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll be broadcasting live from the Cosmopolitan Hotel. And this is the time of year, Chris, where you start to think, okay, we lost X, Y, and Z from last year. How are we going to replace it? Who's going to replace it? So you and I must have spent the better part of 2 hours this morning, maybe an hour and a half, trying to add up numbers of receiving, rushing, and throwing. Throwing didn't take that much time, but receiving and rushing did. Of how we're going to carve up the pie this year for Boise State football.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exercise more than it is a prediction, because if you are going to make a prediction on the upcoming season, you would change things that happened from the year before. Like, you would not think Boise State, or maybe you would think Boise State would throw more and have more passing yards than last year, and you might think they'd have fewer passing yards. than the year before. And same with rushing. You could think Boise State would run the ball or have more rushing yards than they did last year, or you could think they'd have fewer rushing yards than they did last year. But I thought it'd be a fun exercise to just take the yardage totals from last year and the touchdown totals from last year and the catch and carry totals from last year as a given. Like, let's say it's the same last year as it will be this year. So given those numbers as the same, how would you divide it up knowing now what you know about the 2017 Boise State roster? I thought it'd be a fun exercise to do. It turned out to be really hard. Like, it turned out to be really difficult to do, which I guess I could give my conclusion before we even begin this, is that this year's team is going to have to be a lot different than last year's team, because just the formula of inputting the stats and dividing them up from a roster that looks like this just really was a challenge to do.
All right, let's start with rushing, and then we'll go to passing receiving a little bit later on in the show. Last season, Boise State had roughly 500 carries. Now, carries are handoffs, carries are reverses, carries are sacks, carries are when a quarterback takes a knee. So last year, Brett Rypien had 48 carries. Most people, I'm sure, would have guessed way less. Mm-hmm. But again, you get sacked, I don't know, 10 or 15 times, and then you get, you know, three or four maybe kneel downs in a game. You're trying to kill the clock. You know, you run the ball maybe on a busted play, you get 5 yards. Yeah. So you figure that's going to be pretty much the same. I think the biggest number is 314 of the 500 carries last year went to McNichols. Number two was Alexander Madison at 67. So I think the biggest question is, does Madison have that high a percentage as McNichols did last year? Mm-hmm. And if not, where do the extra carries go? I think he will not carry the ball as many times as McNichols did last year. And I say that only because McNichols carried the ball an awful lot. And I think that under the best case scenario, and this is best case scenario, nobody getting hurt,
yeah,
et cetera, you don't want to work your running back that much if you don't have to. Now, the only thing that would say to me that maybe those numbers would be similar would be, I think the schedule's tougher this year. Hmm. And you may not be able to substitute as much as you have in past years.
That's fair. Like in the games, second halves, like the Louisiana game in the opener last year, how McNichols didn't really have to do anything in the second half of that game because it was over. So you said like 500 carries is our given. That's the pie, the common denominator that we're working off of, because that was roughly the amount of carries they had last year.
McNichols took 63% of the carries last year.
314. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, how many did you give Madison?
I gave him 280.
That's right on the money of what I had. We did this exercise separately, so we're going to have different numbers. But I had 280 for Madison, so same amount.
Now, the next big question when you're looking at running back, in my opinion, is do you think that Drake Beasley's going to redshirt?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, then I think that that means there'll be more carries spread across the board, because mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to unredshirt somebody to take 10 carries, ideally.
Yeah.
So I kind of chickened out, and I put Mahone, Wolpin, and Beasley with 45 carries each.
Oh, okay, so you when you have to, you know, do crazy gymnastics with the numbers, you sometimes have to like split it down the middle like that. Okay, between these guys, let's just give them 45 all. Like, I did this exercise assuming Beasley would redshirt just because the way I divided it up, like, it would make more sense because I'm giving Madison, and then I say Wolpin will kind of be, to me, pretty decent number two. Maybe he'll get a good.
You haven't taken 100 carries?
I have him 100.
Really?
Yeah. I have 100. I have 100 for 500 yards. Maybe it's just like over exaggeration from watching the spring game, but he looked capable, right? Mm-hmm. He looked capable of being able to take, let's say, 5 carries a game. And if Boise State's up by a lot, he can maybe get 15 in a contest. So I think Wolpin could get a lot of work given he's healthy.
All right. Where do you have? I have Wilson for 15 carries on end arounds, mm-hmm. et cetera. I've got Cozart, the transfer from Kansas. I've given him 15 carries. And then I've given Constantine 5, figuring he might come in addition to Cozart. Yeah. And I have Velasquez, the punter, with 1.
Hey, got a fake punt in there somewhere. Okay. Or maybe,
and I have Rypien with 44.
Yeah, I've ripped it with 50, just to make the math a little bit easier. Yeah, I mentioned a Wolf in 100 to Madison's 280, so we each have the same for the top guy there. And I just had a category for others because, well, you mentioned like a punter in there. Maybe some of these other receivers get reverses, so it adds up to one or two. But I have others for 30 carries, which means Wilson 10 on reverses. I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they might want to use Richardson in that kind of role too, right?
Well, like, I had other receivers for like 5 or 6.
Yeah, I think Richardson, I have him for 10 carries on reverses and end arounds and things like that too, because like at one point, that was kind of the way they were trying to get him on the field, is to try to just get it to him in space. So I have that, and I have Mahone at 20 carries. So maybe he gets into a couple of games and gets some work. So all that adds up to 500. 280 for Madison, 100 for Wolpin, 50 for Rippin, Mahone 20, Wilson 10, Richardson 10, and then others, whether it's like a backup quarterback or other receivers on reverses, punts that go awry or fake punts. So 30 combined for that.
What do you have for the totals? I have Madison rushing for 1,500 yards, and I have the other running backs going for 600.
Hmm. Now, we have to say 2,200 yards is what we're basing this off of, correct? Mm-hmm. Based off of the total from last year. So, Madison, I had 1,400. What did you say you had?
I had him as 1,500.
Okay, so we're right around the same ballpark. We see a similar season for him. I have Wolpin 500 yards, Mahone 80 yards. So, close to 600 yards for the backup.
I put 600 for the backup running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had Cosart, Wilson, Rip Richardson, all those guys for 200.
Yeah, chipping in Wilson 100, Richardson 80, others 60. So,
and I had Rippin for negative.
And yeah, Rippin's a negative 20 for me. But I have him with a touchdown because we have to divide the 29 touchdowns from rushing last year.
All right, let's go down this before we get back to passing and receiving. I have Madison with 15 touchdowns, considerably less than what McNichols had. McNichols mm-hmm. was a machine.
Yeah.
I have Wolpin scoring 5. I kind of see him maybe as a goal line back. I would have 4 for Rippin, 3 for Mahone, and then
wow, Rippin getting 4. I like that. That's a lot for Rippin.
Quarterback sneak.
4 of them. What do you have, one last year? I have Madison at 18, so maybe the difference between the ones you gave Rippin, I gave Madison 18. Wolpin, I was with you with 5, getting some work around the goal line. Wilson gets in on a couple of reverses, given the same thing, again, given the 29 touchdowns from last year. Got to give him somewhere. Richardson gets 1, others combined with 2.
Call 424-9300 right now. Be the third caller to win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's on the northwest corner of Oberlin and Eagle to score lunch or dinner. It's Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or friends and family. It's an award-winning menu, huge video wall, and big screen TVs await. JP even approves it. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. It's good food and good sports. How we divide the catches and throws next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Boise State football just around the corner. Bob and Chris together today on Idaho Sports Talk. We'll be here until 3. Regular lineup. Caves and Prater in from 3 until 6.
Miracles do happen.
Fish and JP also across the glass working with their respective shows. Talking about Boise State, where might the percentage of catches, rushes, yardage go? We had Alexander Madison is getting the lion's share of the carries, but not as many as Jeremy McNichols last year.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, I thought, was the easiest exercise. I think Brett Rippin, who completed last year virtually all the passes, 244 out of the 253, I see the number being very similar. Only a handful of completions being thrown by somebody else. I don't see a two-quarterback system. Mm. You know, I think your Wildcat might come in and throw a few passes. I think you'll have a few trick passes where either a running back or a receiver is going to throw the ball. But I would expect Brett Rippin, if we're using the number 250, rounding it, I have him throwing about 240 of the 250 passes.
Yeah, that was right around there. 242 of the completions, right around that. And of the total yards, you know, 3,900 yards is what Boise State had last year passing, again, roughly, just doing some rounding up and down. I have Rippin all but 200 of that. You know, others, maybe, you know, a couple of 50-yard trick plays down the line. Maybe Rippin could catch one of those, too. We've seen him be able to catch something down the field. But, yeah, I have it, you know, all but 200 of the yards go to Brett Rippin.
I had all but 350. I had Cosart maybe being used a little more last year as a Wildcat, if he is indeed the Wildcat. I didn't think McNichols back there was a real threat to throw. I would like to think somebody that has started in the Big 12 can throw the ball a little more out of the Wildcat than a running back can. And then I have you know, 100 yards or so going for a trick pass.
That's interesting because, like, when I did this, I thought about Cozart and I thought, well, nah, I don't think he's going to have really a role. It's going to be kind of the Tommy Stewart thing, is at least what I thought from, you know, my spot where we kept being told that Tommy Stewart could be in on a package and be a Wildcat guy if they wanted to, and it just never happened because why would you ever want to remove Brett Rypien from the equation when he's as good as he is? And I think he'll be kind of similar with Rypien as a junior. Like, how many packages where Rypien's not your quarterback, is it a better option for you?
Well, it's something I guess I'll have to decide. I think it's how good is Cozart? And it, you know, I would have to say you started a couple seasons in the Big 12, not that he was a really, you know, great Big 12 quarterback, but you've got to be better than Tommy Stewart.
I would hope. But that doesn't mean you're better than Brett Rypien.
No.
A better option on the given play than Rypien, which is, to me, what it comes down to.
So I thought the bigger exercise was wide receiver, was tight end.
It was tough.
Was running backs coming out. And I have so many different crossouts that I have here and there. We know 80 catches are gone from Spurbeck, and we know 30 are gone from Chaz Anderson. So that's 110 that have to go to somebody else on the list. The guys that I have getting more catches than they had last year, I have Wilson getting more catches, but I don't think he can get a whole lot more. I have Madison getting more because he'll come out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Rowe was hurt a lot, so I have his number going up a pretty good margin.
Yep.
I think Danans will be used a little bit more. I think Modster's numbers come up. And then I put a category for freshman wide receivers because I think at least one of them is going to have a pretty good role on this team.
Okay. Again, I just divided it with others when it came down to guys who haven't been established and you can save for your random reception here and there. But, yeah, I have a category for others. But, yeah, I'm right around with you with the increase. Basically, everybody has to increase, right? If you're on the field, you're going to get more targets because when you have Spurbeck and Anderson and McNichols, those targets going away, if you're on the field, you're going to get more targets than what you got last year.
All right, so let me ask you. On Wilson, because I think he's the most fascinating receiver.
Yeah.
I have him having 10 more catches than last year. Do you have that number higher than 10?
Higher.
Okay.
Yeah. Much higher than 10 more catches. Was it 68 last year?
He had 56 catches. I have him with 65 on my exercise.
Okay.
So, they targeted him a lot last year.
I know they targeted him a lot, but
Spurbeck had 80. You have him north of that.
Yes.
You have him north of 80.
Yes. Go back a couple years ago. It's not that long since a Boise State receiver had close to 90 catches. Thomas Spurbeck a couple years ago at 88. And I think Wilson, in terms of his talent compared to the rest of the options to throw the ball to, is it that dissimilar to what Spurbeck was a couple of years ago, the rest of the options? If Spurbeck could get 88 2 years ago, Wilson can get 90 this year. And that's what I have, 90 for Wilson.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you are right on this one. I had it being more diversified. I had Wilson with 65. I had Modster and Rowe with 35. I had the freshman receivers with 35. I had Madison and Danans each with 20. I had other running backs with 15, other wide receivers with 15, and other tight ends with 10.
Okay. There's a lot of other groups because, again, you just figure who's going to be the dude in a lot of those spots. Yeah, I have Wilson 90. Because again,
the school record.
Spurbeck had the school record, and Wilson was very productive with Spurbeck still on the field. So with Spurbeck not there anymore, and all the targets that are available, the number one receiver is going. I know he's going to get more defensive attention, and that's part of it. And we're going to delve into that, I'm sure, plenty, including when you and Jeff Caves are at Mountain West Media Days, or I'm sorry, the Mountain West Media Summit next week. You have to climb up there then? You got to stick with the terminology here. Don't want to get the conference mad at me. So, yeah, Wilson, 90. Rowe, 40. Modster, 35. We both had him as a number two receiver, right?
Yes, I had him with 35. No, I actually had Rowe with 35 also.
Okay, so I had Rowe a little bit more in terms of catches. Richardson, 30. Is that too...
Well, I would have had him with others and others with 15, so that would be significantly higher. I hope, again, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. And maybe I'm overvaluing the tight ends because I have 35 from Rowe. I've got 20 from Danans, and I've got 10 from the rest. So
that's
a
lot of tight end
catches. I'm saying 65 catches for the tight ends.
If you have that many tight end catches, is your offense explosive?
It would probably be more of a short passing game at that point.
Yeah.
And that's why I have and that's why I have Wilson with lower, because I think he's going to be the guy to stretch the field. We'll maybe not get as many, but his yardage will be high per catch.
And again, we have to contextualize this, given the 250 catches from last year, and we're just kind of carrying them over the same number of catches this year. These aren't exactly predictions. It's, okay, save the common denominator, catches from last year. If we divided that pie to this year, what would it be?
Okay, so last year, Spurbeck outlasted Wilson for the receiving record for yard, not record, but the leader for yards,
mm-hmm.
with about 143 more yards, despite the fact that he had 24 less catches. So if you're saying Wilson's going to get 90 catches,
mm-hmm. with the
same
pie,
what number of yards do you have him getting?
Now, here's where it gets really optimistic. But again, this is the only way I can make this work, given the mysteries other places on the roster. 1,550 yards receiving. That's a lot. That's a huge number. But if we're saying Rippon in the passing offense is going to have 3,900 yards, just like they did last year, to say Wilson's going to get that percentage of it, I don't think it's an unrealistic number.
So you're going to have his per catch total average go down.
Yeah, well, probably will have to go down,
right,
because he's getting more catches.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to be used more all over the field.
Because I had way less catches than you did,
yeah,
but I'm keeping his average higher. I have him for 1,500 yards.
Okay, so you're right with me in the yards part. Yeah, I think when you get more catches and you're used more and you're more dependable all over the field, mm-hmm. your yards per catch will go down. But I do think that 1,500, we're both right around the same area, 1,500 yards. That's pretty nuts. But I do think it'll be more, you know,
who do you have as your, who do you have as the next? I have Madison about 300 yards receiving. I've got Rowe for about 500. I got Modster for 450, and I've got other receivers for about 600.
Yeah, I got Rowe for 600, Modster for 550, Richardson for 450. But again, I think I'm more optimistic on him at least getting opportunities and given the same 3,900 yards from last year. Madison with 350. I have a couple of the tight ends, whether it's, you know, Danon's night, you know, whether close to 200 yards. At Butler for 100. Others, 10 catches, 130 yards. And we didn't even divide the touchdowns yet. We can do that later.
KTIK is a proud sponsor of Finals Night. It's coming up Saturday at the Snake River Stampede at the Ford Idaho Center in Nampa. Tickets on sale now at ictickets.com. Get more information at snakeriverstampede.com. Fish, we got an update coming up. What's going to be in it?
Well, another day, another award watch list for Brett Rippon, plus New York Yankees making the second big trade of the deadline. We'll see how Bob feels they came out on top. Coming up next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
And we'll start The Ticket Sports Update in a similar way we started yesterday, with Brett Rippon being named to another preseason award watch list, his fourth of the watch list season. He was named to the Davey O'Brien, given to the nation's top quarterback. He's now his fourth preseason watch list. He's also on the watch list for the Maxwell, the Warfel Award, and the All-States Good Hands Award.
Each of the awards means different things. The O'Brien is quarterback only. Warfel has to do with studies as well as different things that you do in the community. And the All-State Good Hands Award is again, for community service. So different types of awards out there. Unfortunately, I think sometimes the right ones don't win, but it would be nice to see Brett walk away with one of those at one point in the time he's here. I thought more or Luck should have won the O'Brien over Cam Newton.
Is there too many watch lists or people on the watch list?
They want as many on the watch list as possible so their award gets mentioned in every city around the country.
No, because what they should be to limit it, you should have to give a watch to everybody who's on your watch list.
Okay.
That way there wouldn't be as many people on the watch list because it'd actually be special. You know, ain't nobody trying to buy a fancy watch for everybody. But yeah, congratulations.
Well, there's only 30 quarterbacks on the Davey O'Brien. Is that too many or not?
If you're going to whittle them down, no.
Yeah.
I'll bet you there'll be somebody that'll get added because you don't even know they're going to start.
That's the whole thing. Like, just because you're on the watch list, like, that's not your pool for people who can win it. You can win the postseason one without being on the preseason watch list. So it's just, you know, again, to get attention and get a headline, get a press release in the months leading up to college football season.
Well, another couple of awards for some Boise State basketball players. No watch list this time, Chris Lewis. You don't have to worry. Three members of the Boise State basketball team named to the National Association of Basketball Coaches Honor Court. Nick Duncan, Matt Grooms, and Zach Haney all honored based on their success in the classroom. In order to be considered for the Honor Court, a student-athlete needs to have a 3.2 GPA or higher and be an upperclassman as a student, not athletically.
So good for them. Smart. No wonder Boise State gets all these wins. Smart people.
No watches, though. How will they know the time, Chris Lewis? And then one more piece of local news. Will McMullen, who played quarterback for Boise High last year, has had his transfer request to Rocky Mountain denied. He enrolled last spring after his family moved. He has an appeal coming up August 2nd. Otherwise, he may not be able to play in his senior season.
Well, that's a tough call. Reading different things and, you know, different states have different rules. And it seems like with an appeals board, there's not a hard and fast you can, you can't. They look at things individually. I think that would be something very, very difficult of when to weigh if somebody actually moves versus somebody trying to transfer to play for a better team or take advantage of the system. I think it's hard, and I would not want to have to sit on that board.
I feel like it is the best way to do it on a case-by-case basis, right? Have a hard set rule in place, but there are circumstances, whether it's moving or whether it's hardship. There's a lot of things that play a factor in something like this, so I think the best way to do it is a case-by-case basis. But when you evaluate something on a case-by-case basis, you see, like, the NFL, when they say they're going to do everything on a case-by-case basis, the chance of hypocrisy and inconsistency does pop up, so it's always a tough line to navigate.
Well, the end of the July, besides the preseason award watch list time, it's time for the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Trades start heating up, and the New York Yankees, the second team to pull the trigger after dropping to third in the AL East. They have traded for White Sox relievers David Robertson and Tommy Canley, and third baseman Todd Frazier. In return, the White Sox will get the first-round pick from last year by the Yankees, Blake Rutherford, prospect Ian Clarkin, outfielder prospect Tito Polo, and Tyler Clippard. In addition, this trade means that the number one prospect in baseball, Yoan Moncada, who came over to the White Sox as part of the Chris Sale deal, has been called up to play third base full-time.
Big trade for the Yankees. This, to me, is going to get a double thumbs up. I think that they keep Todd Frazier away from the Red Sox. That was good for them. But I think having Robertson and Canley in their bullpen, give them with Chapman, this is going to be a tough bullpen. I think the Yankees came out smelling like a rose on this one.
Yeah, but Chi-Town's farm system is stacked. They are loaded with top 100 prospects. They might not have room for all these guys once they all are primed and ready to go. But I'm looking at the AL Central down the line. Like, you know, Detroit's kind of old. Kansas City, old. You know, Minnesota, I mean, they're okay. And they probably will be okay / pretty good. But Chicago has a high ceiling for the future in the AL Central. So I'm looking forward to them the next few years.
Talking about Moncada, we are in a fantasy baseball league, right, Chris Lewis?
We are.
So the Wayside Cephalopods, the guy I'm chasing for the playoffs, I was like, oh, I'm going to add Moncada. He's number one prospect, right? Yeah. This dude added him to his team at 12:50 a.m. today.
Oh, wow.
He was on top of it. I thought I was on top of it coming in at 9 o'clock and being ready. 12:50. This guy
so
added
it's first him. Come, first serve?
It is. It's first come,
I feel
first
like there
serve.
Should be waivers. Like, I don't know. Like, if you got a new player into the player pool, it should be a waiver system to claim him. Worst record gets him, or whoever's first.
He was on the ball,
system.
So shout out to him. I was upset. I didn't think anyone else would be paying attention. One other big trade did happen to the Arizona Diamondbacks, who now only have a half game lead on the Rockies for the first wild card spot. They have traded for Tigers outfielder JD Martinez for three prospects, including the number four ranked prospect in their organization.
I think the Tigers could have gotten more. I think they went early. I think they probably could have held out for a little bit more. These prospects are not rated as highly as I would have thought they would have been able to covet for JD Martinez. Diamondbacks right now look dead in the water. Rockies starting to tread water a little bit and have regained themselves. The National League, the wild cards are up for grabs because I think the Diamondbacks and Rockies aren't as strong, and Arizona trying to do something to keep themselves in there.
My question is for the people, the teams that have the assets that other ones want, the ready-made players, the ones that teams are looking to buy. If you're selling, why would you do it the 19th of July when the trade deadline's the 31st? I've always wondered this. Like, deadlines spur action, and the closer you get to the deadline, you feel like the more desperate team is a team that doesn't have that big player that the seller has. So just common sense and negotiation would tell me the closer you get to the 31st, the better deal you can get.
Sometimes, but then sometimes the teams maybe that are looking for that go out and shop and buy and now aren't into that position. The other thing, and this is nothing you would ever know, but you know, your guy could get hurt. If your guy all of a sudden pulls a hamstring and is day-to-day for the next week and it heads into that last week, you know, people don't want to buy damaged goods.
Fair.
And we'll end the sports update with an interesting story out of Jacksonville. Dante Fowler Jr. was the third overall pick of the 2015 NFL Draft. He was arrested last night after he got into an altercation with a man. According to the police report, Fowler was upset after the man made a comment on his driving. Fowler then got out of the car, hit the man, knocked his glasses off, and stepped on them. But that wasn't enough. Fowler then took the victim's grocery bag, where he had recently just purchased some liquor, and threw it into a lake.
I know the NFL player pool is much larger than a lot of other sports, but why does this always happen with the NFL? Doesn't it seem like NFL players, you hear more about stories like this when it comes to NFL players than any other group of players? Like, if you added up the other sports, you probably finally get a larger player pool than the NFL. NFL incidents probably still double all the other sports that we follow.
So NFL,
what
are we
going to
call? 53 man?
Yeah.
Baseball, are we going to just count the major league?
We'll count to 25 in the majors.
And then you get, what, another 14, 15 in
NBA.
You count the practice squad, and then you throw hockey in. It's probably pretty close.
Yeah.
3-1.
And
I don't think it's 3-1 in events.
Exactly. NFL's just out here. Ezekiel Elliott, Dante Fowler. You can just go down the line.
Fish, I think you missed in baseball maybe the biggest story of the night is that Carlos Correa, all-star shortstop for the American League-leading Astros, out 6 to 8 weeks with a torn ligament in his thumb. Not going to hurt them as far as their chase to the American League West, but if he doesn't come back strong, that could be the difference between World Series and no.
True, and speaking of baseball, Chris, you got it. The Phillies took 2-3 from the Marlins with a 10-3 win today.
That's what's
so
up.
I'll give you your props after the Marlins won Game 1.
This prospect, and my man Nick Williams, was rookie. He had 2 triples in this game. Freddie Galvez had 3 hits. The Fish just ain't got it.
We still have 40 wins. That'll take you till the end of August at this point.
Yeah, I know, right?
Chris and I are getting higher picks than you coming up next June.
That's true. That's true.
Trust the process.
Domino's Pizza presents Mountain West Media Days on Sports Radio The Ticket. It'll be Tuesday the 25th and Wednesday the 26th. Jeff Caves and I will be live from Las Vegas. Listen to interviews with all the Mountain West coaches and players from 1 to 6 both days. We'll be live at the Cosmopolitan Hotel. I hope they give me my suite again, although I don't think I can be that lucky 2 years in a row. College football time next Tuesday and Wednesday, live from Vegas on your FM home of Boise State Football, Sports Radio 93.1 FM, The Ticket. Quick hits up next, where Chris and I tackle 4 topics in rapid-fire fashion, including who should turn 52 today that is desperately missed, and what I never expected to watch. That's coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Chris, I know one of your all-time favorites and one of the great sportscasters would have been 52 today.
Yep, that's Stuart Scott, and the Undefeated had a pretty good write-up. I think it was Justin Tinsley who wrote it, basically saying how he's impacted his career. Of course, you know, I grew up watching SportsCenter and watching him do his thing. And I feel like today, like in 2017, I almost miss him now more than ever just because of, you know, some of the things that you're seeing, whether it's, you know, basically Michael Vick saying that Colin Kaepernick needs to hide everything that is black about him so he can get employment. Like, that's what Stuart Scott, like, he wasn't hiding anything about him. He was going to be himself on the air, and it was for you to kind of accept how he was, and it connected with a lot of different people, not just black people. And then I saw this over the weekend, the Mike Tirico article, which really kind of disappointed me a bit because he's one of the guys who I've looked up to, one of the best play-by-play announcers out there. But he, in this article, basically said, why do I have to say that I'm black? And that kind of disappointed me because one of the things I love about him is he is one of the rare black play-by-play announcers who is at the network level. And if he isn't proud enough about being black for himself to really accept the fact that he is, that makes me a little bit disappointed. Like, Stuart Scott wasn't like that. Like, he will be somebody who will be himself no matter what. And, you know, I miss that. And I wish he was still doing SportsCenter. And I just still don't think SportsCenter is the same without him on the anchor desk.
Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
No, I have not.
Obviously,
never did not.
Right. Would he be the guy that if you could, you know, however they say, have dinner with somebody, you know, name three people you'd like to have dinner with that
yeah,
are alive, he'd be on the list?
Yeah, be on the list because, you know, unapologetically him, really cool, really fun, and he made sports and sports casting seem like it was something really cool to do, and it's probably the reason why I'm a broadcaster.
Topic number two.
Everything is available to watch online, but it's something that you didn't think you would be able to see.
How about a parole hearing?
Oh, yeah.
O.J. Simpson's parole hearing tomorrow. I think it's like 10 Pacific time. CBS Sports is streaming it. I'm sure other places are as well. He's going to be at the correctional facility in Lovelock, which is on the way on 80, like you're going from Winnemucca to Reno on the right side there. Parole board is going to be in Carson City. I'm wondering exactly what you're going to see. Are you going to see the questions they ask him? Are you going to see the board members deliberating? They need to be unanimous. Only four are going to be there. There's normally seven. It sounds like in order for him to get it, he's going to have a 4-0 sweep and say yes. I wonder if it's going to be different because he's famous. It's only the charges, and I say only the charges based on the incidents down in Vegas with the memorabilia and beating people up has nothing to do with anything else. I think it's going to be fascinating.
So you're in. You want to see this? You're in?
Like I think I want to see it more just on how something like that works.
Okay. So you want to see it based on procedure.
Yeah.
So it could be anybody, though. Like, if you were wanting to see this based on procedure,
yeah, I never thought you could even see it. Yeah, I would never thought that you could see something like this online. So that means if we had some friend, yeah, could we watch that person's parole board hearing? Random person?
Michael Fisher's like, you know, how you throw me into the same sentence as OJ? Like, he over there, he's still flustered. But yeah, I understand your point.
I mean, I know the OJ case, the trial, was one of the first ones that was ever shown on television.
It's going to be a media craze.
Oh, absolutely.
Just like the trial was a media craze. Now, how much of it is in 2017 about the fact that we just had documentaries on this, like a couple of them, the docu-series and the documentary, just a year ago, and it kind of re-energized a lot of people's emotions about this. Like, how much of it is the timing of, okay, this is very soon after the documentaries, and, like, if the documentaries didn't happen last year, would the interest still be there in OJ?
I think anybody that's that publicly famous, if they had a chance for parole, I think people would be interested. I mean, somebody that's that nationally known, now he's 70 years old, been away from his football and movie playing days, obviously been in jail for a while now, too. But certainly somebody that a great percentage of this country would be able to know on site.
Topic number three.
Who's an athlete you think people 5 years younger than you have no idea just how good they were at their peak?
This is a really fun question. Somebody posted on social media, and a lot of people replied. It got a lot of traction, which like got me to think everybody could do this. Like an athlete that, you know, other people just don't understand how good they were at their prime. People are just slightly younger than you. For me, the athlete I would pick for this, and I'm interested in Bob if he has one, and Fish maybe the same thing, Roy Halladay. I think people 5 years younger than me wouldn't understand how good Roy Halladay was when Halladay was like at his peak. Like, this is a guy, I don't look at the win totals. I'm not somebody who does, but he's led the league in wins a couple of times. But he was, when he was on his game, the movement on his pitches was almost unhittable. Like, nothing he threw came out straight. And that's why you got seasons where his ERA, you know, 3.16, 2.93, 3.25, 2.41, 3.19, 2.78, 2.79, at a period where there was a lot of offense in a division, quite a bit of it, that was stacked with the Yankees and the Red Sox at their best. And Roy Halladay, a couple of times he won the Cy Young Award All-Star multiple times. I don't think he gets the attention. Nobody talks about him anymore. Nobody says, when you look at the era's best pitchers, like you'll go from like Roger Clemens to Clayton Kershaw. Like, the Johan Santana and Roy Halladay periods almost forgotten. And that would be the athlete I would pick.
So I'm trying to think of like what era that would be. So do you think that would be somebody that would be 12 to 14 minus 5 puts you in the 8-9 range, something like that. That if you were that age, that maybe kids younger wouldn't know the name.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking. That, to me, would have to be somebody probably in the early 70s. Name my brother and I were talking about the other day down in Southern California. Now, this was a rookie year, 76, but a lot of people would not know how good a year Mark Fidrich had pitching for the Tigers in 1976. Now, he got hurt, did very little after that, but he was Fernando-esque when he first came into the league, very similar.
Mm. Fish, you got one?
I got two. One would be Michael Vick when he was a Falcon.
But, see, we carry the water of Michael Vick.
Yeah, but
everybody
see, people
knows
5 years
Michael
younger
Vick
than me when he was on the Falcons were 7 and 9. So they were ages 7 through 9. Not many people are going to remember him on the Falcons, Chris Lewis.
I disagree with that one. I think he's, over time, got more legendary, not less.
And the other one I had, was similar to Bob's, would have been a two-year thing, would have been Dontrelle Willis. When he first came up with the Marlins, I don't think many people remember the crazy leg kick, the hype behind him. So there, you can take the second one. Dontrelle Willis for that three-year span, his first 3 years in the league.
But yeah, I think it has to be somebody that when you were in the low teens or 12, something like that, and other people might be 7 or 8 would be, to me, then what you're looking for. We got softball tomorrow night, offense versus defense for Boise State out at Hawks Memorial Stadium. Brett Rippon, captain of the offensive team, is going to announce the offensive entrance in tomorrow's Home Run Derby. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Second hour of Bob and Chris on Idaho Sports Talk. Caves and Prater will take over from 3 until 6. Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, it's the Summer Softball Classic for Boise State football. Offense against the defense. 6 o'clock will be the start of the Home Run Derby, and then immediately following will be a 6-inning softball game between the two squads. We will hear first from the offensive side, and then in the fairness of radio equal time, we will hear from the defensive side. Brett Rippon gets to go first, so I guess it's kind of like a coin toss. The Broncos want to receive the ball to start things. Brett, thanks for joining myself and Chris here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so you have to pick four guys, because if not, it might take forever, because I'm sure everybody wants to be in the Home Run Derby. How did you guys decide which four? I'm not asking you for the guys now, but what was the criteria? Did you have like a hit off? Did you kind of just look at it? Is you as the captain make the decision? Is it somebody who decided they'd take you for dinner? You put them on the list. How'd you pick it?
Well, actually it was a little easier last year because we had the shortened fence out there. So we just went straight off who hit the most amount of home runs at batting practice. But we didn't have that this year. So I just kind of had to look at everyone's swing and, make my best guess on who would probably hit the most home runs for our offensive side pick for those guys. So it was a little more difficult, but I think I got a pretty good lineup there.
Yeah, but without revealing who exactly what is at this point, I mean, what's your level of confidence that, I mean, at least the offense is better than the defense?
I'm fairly confident. And, you know, really the home run derby is one part of it, but I'm more confident in, our entire team in general and just in the actual game because we got a lot of guys that are great base hit guys and can run as well. So, maybe if we don't have the most power, that's okay. The defense won the home run derby last year, but we won the game, so that's all right. That's all right with me.
All right, so give us the four guys that will be batting for the offense and maybe just a – kind of a Cliff Notes version of maybe why they should be in there.
So I got Brock Barr, Ezra Cleveland, Jake Constantine, and Alec Danen. And, I mean, really it came down to Brock Barr was actually probably the biggest surprise. He showed up to batting practice in jeans and cowboy boots and just started hitting bombs. It was pretty sweet. And then Ezra Cleveland, he was a baseball player in high school, big old dude, probably 300 pounds at this point, and got a pretty nice swing, right-handed swing. Jay Constantine, he's a baseball player in high school, too. He's got a nice little lefty uppercut swing. Maybe not the most power, but his plane of the ball should be able to get some out. So I'm expecting big things from him. And then same with Alec Bannon. He was in it last year, and he did really well. So he was kind of an in already.
We're joined by Brett Rippon. He's talking about the softball game coming up, Boise State offense versus defense. You just heard who will be the home run derby participants on the offensive side. How about when it comes to the actual game? Because you say that's also, you know, pretty important, and you'd almost rather win the actual game than the home run derby. What's the strategy of alignment and who you place where in terms of defense and a lineup for the actual game itself?
That's a good question, you know, because we don't have not everybody has played baseball before on the team, and watching a few of the guys field last Wednesday, it was a little alarming. So I have to figure out where to put some guys in some certain spots. I don't think I want to put, because usually, you know, in baseball you can hide your worst defenders out in the outfield, but in slow pitch, ball gets hit out there a lot. So we're gonna have to figure out a few places for some guys, but you know, overall I think we have enough athletes out there that we should be okay.
Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Prizes given out, fans with a chance to interact with players, autographs at the end of the night. Really good opportunity for people to come out and get a chance to meet guys like yourself.
Yeah, no, for sure. It'll be a really fun time. You know, we're doing a lot of different stuff than we were last year. And I know, like you said, you know, getting the autograph session in there, some prizes for the fans during the game. And, you know, it'll be a really fun time. And I know all the players are looking forward to it.
Now, when it comes to offense versus defense, is there anything on the line concrete for the winner?
Not right now, but, you know, I might have to talk to the defensive captain, Leighton Van Der Esch, and see if we can get something going on that, because that would definitely raise the stakes, and that would be good for the fans to see.
Now, even if there isn't anything concrete on the line, I'm sure bragging rights would be there. So who on the offense would be the best trash talker to the defense if you indeed get this dub?
Oh, man. I know, well, the D definitely has the two best trash talkers on the team with Avery Williams and Dez Williams. So those two guys you'll hear the entire game for sure. But Sed Wilson, I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot of trash talking, but when he does say something, because he's a pretty quiet guy, it sticks. So that would probably be our best trash talker. But, no, it'll be fun, though. You know, everybody will be out there talking and, you know, giving guys grief if they swing and miss. You just saw a little glimpse of that during the practice last week, and there was a lot of that going on.
Brett Rippon, Boise State quarterback, joining us now. We'll hear from the defenses. Leighton Van Der Esch coming up in a matter of minutes. Brett, going to a couple of things in the news. You've been mentioned on, you know, four or five watch lists during the course of this offseason. What does it mean to you when you see your name on something like the O'Brien or the Werfel or the Maxwell or, you know, any of those preseason lists?
Yeah, well, I actually hadn't really found out about those until the other day, because I'm not on Twitter anymore. So I just find out through my teammates nowadays who come into the locker room and tell me those types of things. But, you know, it's definitely an honor to be on those watch lists. But at the same time, you know, that's just something that you kind of put in the back of your mind, and, you know, you kind of try to focus on different things, because that at the end of the day doesn't really have anything to do with our success this season. So,
well, I know
doesn't
you
really matter.
I know you might not be on Twitter, but I definitely saw your backside on Twitter a little bit earlier on this offseason with what you were doing there at that event in the offseason. Now, what are you more proud of? How you were able to move that backside, or you being on all these watch lists?
Probably the, you know, the twerking, just because, you know, I got everybody fired up in that during that you know, women's clinic, and that was you know, turned out a lot, you know, got a lot more hype than I thought it would have when before I did it. If I would have had to overdo it again, I probably wouldn't have done it. But that was a good time, and I'm glad all the fans enjoyed that on Twitter. So.
As we finish up, give us an idea of what's left. Player-run practices, are they done? You know, what's left? When is the team report? Because, I mean, we're just around the corner from this thing starting.
Yeah, no, so we have a couple more player-run practices, and then we get finished up, I think, next Tuesday. Or, yeah, I think right around next Tuesday, and then get a little bit of a break, and then we start up the 31st, so coming up pretty quick here, but it's been a great summer, and all the guys have been working really, really hard. Coaching staff, players, everybody around the facility. So, you know, I'm excited to get into fall camp, see what some of these freshmen can do, and you know, see where everybody's at after a great summer, because I think a lot of guys will take a step forward in their game.
All right, Brett, thanks so much for being with us. 6 o'clock tomorrow night out at Hawks Stadium. Give us a guy to watch on the offensive team in the game. Is there somebody that you would have as the preeminent choice of maybe being you guys' MVP?
Oh, yeah. I'd have to say, Cedric Wilson, he's going to be a guy to watch for sure. He had a couple Division I offers coming out of high school, and, you know, he's pretty smooth at shortstop and can hit and can run, so that'll be a good one. And, you know, we got a few guys that, you know, could step up, but never really know until we get into the game, so it'll be fun.
Brett, thanks for your time. Good luck tomorrow night.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
So Cedric Wilson, the player to watch, and I do agree. I think I'd be more interested in winning the team game than having one of my guys win the home run derby.
That's fair. That's a good point. Now, is he just saying Cedric Wilson to keep his top receiver happy? Because that's part of the quarterback's job. You got to make sure that top receiver is, you know, pretty happy with you. So, and I'm sure he, you know, Brett Rippon spitting the facts about his ability to play some
baseball. Visiting with A.J. Richardson, he's played some baseball, and he played first base last year. That was a key position for the offense. You want to make sure that you got somebody that can catch balls over there. Big difference. You could probably spot, especially on the defensive side, who's played and who hasn't played.
Yeah, you can find out for sure. And remember, I think, what was it, last year where, like, the fly balls out to center field were a disaster some of the time. So, yeah, not always an automatic. Now, he was talking about the video in the offseason about him twerking. I have a feeling in Mountain West Media Days or Media Summit, that's going to be something that he's going to have to get used to discussing, because, you know, not much happens in a college football offseason, but a lot of different people saw that.
You think I should work that adjective in as he tries to juke his way around the defensive line?
If you do, oh, we will have a field day. Please, absolutely do it.
Domino's Pizza will present Mountain West Media Days on Sports Radio The Ticket. That'll be next Tuesday and Wednesday. Gaves and I will be down there in Las Vegas. You can listen to interviews with all the Mountain West head coaches and players as well. It'll be from 1 to 6 both days from the Cosmopolitan Hotel. It's college football time next Tuesday and Wednesday, live from Vegas on your FM home for Boise State football, Sports Radio 93.1 FM, The Ticket. We'll find out about the defensive side of the ball, who's going to participate for them, and whether they have a chance. Maybe we can broker a wager between the offense and defense. We'll ask Leighton what he thinks the defense's chances are next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Getting set tomorrow night for Boise State football, playing softball. The offense and the defense. It'll be preceded by a home run derby at 6 o'clock, all at Hawks Memorial Stadium. Autograph signing afterward. Prizes. Some fans will get a chance to actually participate in some contests along the way. So it sounds like a nice night. And, Chris, maybe the biggest thing, the temperature's only going to be in the low 90s for a high tomorrow.
You're able to last in the stands. You don't have to bring your own fan. You can just be a fan instead.
Leighton Vander Esch joins us. We just visited with Brett Rippon. He talked about his selections for the Home Run Derby, and then we also chatted with him about his team. The team practiced at least once last week, because I was out there at the first practice. Probably practiced another time or two in secret. Leighton, thanks for joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we asked Brett this question without revealing your guys yet. How did you come up with the four guys for your defensive home run derby people? Did you have a home run off? Did you draw lots? Did you do it on who decided they would take you to dinner the night before? How did you come up with your four?
Those are all pretty good ways to decide it. Well, first of all, I mean, when we had practice last Wednesday, I was kind of just watching to see who was hitting the best and he was making good contact on the balls, because we weren't really hitting real balls at practice last week. So I could tell the ones that were hitting those ones that the real balls were going to go a lot farther. So, but it was hard. I mean, we had a bunch of guys that were hitting some dingers out in the outfield quite a ways. And I had two that were for sure picked and two spots that were open, but four more guys that I was unsure about. So, we kind of did a draw with that. But there was a little bit of bribing going on between the four, so you see which one would take the slots. But we got it figured out.
No, I was going to ask, like, how do you break it to the person who isn't one of the ones chosen if they believe that they deserve a spot as the four? But it seems like you made it more of a random process doing a draw than it was anything of a decision that you actually made.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with those two spots that we had open and the four guys I was trying to pick from, I wasn't going to try and pick, like, I told him, I was like, I'm not going to pick two of you guys. I'm not going to pick two of you guys because then you guys are just going to get mad at me or whatever. And then I don't want to have to deal with that. So I'm just going to make it random and try doing that. So it worked out.
All right. So who will be hitting for the defense tomorrow night at 6 o'clock?
Well, we got, this one's kind of automatic. We got Mason Smith. I mean, he was a baseball player everybody's talking about. So hopefully he comes in big for us. And then, we got Chase Atata, defensive lineman. He played baseball as well. He's looking pretty good. And Blake Whitlock is third one. He came out of nowhere and kind of surprised me. And so I was kind of glad that he was in it too, because I mean, out of the selection. And the last one's myself. So I had to throw myself in there.
Okay, I'm putting yourself in there.
Brett did not pick himself. Yeah. Is that a surprise, or is Brett a baseball player too? I thought he did play, right?
Brett?
Yeah, he didn't pick himself.
Well, I mean, I thought he was going to be in it. But I mean, they got some big hitters on the offense too, so it was probably easy for him to decide. I mean, they got a lot of ball players on their side too, so I mean, I assume that would have been a hard decision for him as well, but, I mean, I was in it last year.
Fair.
And,
so, all right, you were in it last year. So what's the key to getting a good number? I mean, who pitches? I mean, like, we saw the Major League Home Run Derby and Aaron Judge brings his personal pitcher. Do you have a personal pitcher? Cause I would think that might be his key to who's hitting, who's throwing.
A lot of it is the pitcher, especially in softball. Cause I mean, if you have one, with as slow as the pitches are, you can get pretty consistent with them, and you can find where you want your pitch exactly. And if you find where you want your pitch and you're hitting consistent balls, it makes it pretty easy.
Now, when it comes to the game itself, now, how much of the defense have ballers, and how much of them do you have to maybe, I don't know, find a place to hide them because you're not confident in their ability to hold up the field?
I think we got a pretty good squad put together this year, honestly. I think we're going to make a run for the win, so hopefully. I mean, I was picking guys that I was doing research for like 2 weeks trying to figure out which ones would be the best ones to pick if they played baseball in high school or whatever.
So what percent? We're visiting with Leighton Vander Esch, linebacker, captain of the defensive team. Leighton, what percentage of the guys on football played baseball as a second sport?
That I picked on the defense, yeah, or just the overall team?
No, on this team that you've got. I don't know. What are the list? I saw the list. Like, ooh, 15 guys, 16 guys you got out there tomorrow night?
Yep. I think this is educated.
We have half? Did half play baseball?
I would say at least 75%.
Okay. Wow, that's a big number. Now, of course, the dude with the most baseball experience on that defense, no longer Joe Martirano. Now, has he reached out? Has he given any advice to the defense? Because I'm sure, you know, he would rather have the defense continue to, you know, be the ones that are known for having some power.
Yeah, he came in. He actually showed up. I saw him, I think it was last week, last Monday, I think it was. It was last Monday or it was the week before he came in. He came to the locker room and everybody got to say hi to him. So that was nice getting to see him. And I was like, man, I'm missing you for the home run derby and the softball game this year. He's like, oh, I know. So I talked to him for a little bit about it. But, everybody misses him. And, I mean, he misses us. So kind of a bummer having him gone. But it's nice seeing him every now and then.
Will he be missed more on the softball field or the football field?
I would say the football field. I mean, I miss having him in the locker room. I mean, the softball game's just for fun, but I mean, when it's all said and done, I mean, having a kid like him move on, and I mean, all props to him. I mean, he set that up perfect for himself to have that opportunity to go play at that next level. And I mean, the kid's got it going. And I mean, if you have something going for you like that and you feel it's right, I mean, you can't hold anything against them. They got to do what they got to do.
I mean, I look at linebackers. A lot of experience went out the door at graduation. Joey, Ben Weaver, Darren Lee, Tanner Vallejo, and then you and Tyson Maeva got a chance to play quite a bit at the end of last season. How much did coming back at the end of last season and pairing with Tyson, how much did that help you playing the last three or four games of the year in 16 looking to 17?
Oh, it was awesome. I love playing next to Tyson. I mean, playing those last few games with him quite a bit, it was sweet. I mean, flying around, communicating with him, I mean, it's fun. I mean, I feel like we communicate really well with each other.
But I guess my point is that you guys got a chance to play real games against good teams. How much will that help this year?
I think that'll really help us. I mean, because we were both young, and I mean, that was kind of, we both got to experience that and grow like early together and experience that together. So I think that just helped even more. And then even like in the spring, like I feel like we had a great spring with each other, communicating and everything. And I'm really excited to see what we have in store for the fall.
Leighton Vander Esch joining us. Now, everywhere you look on a preview of the Boise State defense, they mentioned you as a potential breakout guy. What are people seeing from you that is letting people put on the paper, Leighton Vander Esch, breakout player in the Mountain West this season?
I would just say work ethic. I mean, I don't really take anything for granted. I've always had people tell me I can't do it, and that just drives me harder and harder to actually do it. And I mean, we have goals as defense, what we want to accomplish. And I mean, I set goals for myself all the time that I've been working for my whole life. And I mean, I want to do everything I possibly can to better our defense and our team as a whole. So I mean, just working as hard as I possibly can, just put my nose down, doing whatever I possibly can, whatever the coaches say, doing things for your teammates. I mean, they all make the difference.
You have one goal in particular you'd share with us for the defense that you'd like to see hit this year?
I mean, we got to get turnovers. That's been kind of the talk for the last couple of years, but I think we're actually going to do it this year, and we have to do it. I mean, there's no going in and kind of feeling around and saying, like this is what we got to do. No, we have to get that done this year, and it's simple as that. We have to create turnovers.
So this summer, all the player-run practices, how did you guys work on trying to get them?
Putting ourselves in the right position. I mean, setting up on plays, setting up on the offense. I mean, just setting up on teams, knowing where the ball is going to be before it's even thrown or before it's even snapped. I mean, knowing where it's going to go, the route concepts you're going to get interceptions. I mean, tackling, punching ball out, stripping ball out, all that stuff, just attacking the ball pretty much.
And lastly, we asked this question to Brett, a guy that you think might be one to watch for possible MVP honors tomorrow night on the defensive side of the ball. Who might we want to keep the binoculars on?
Ooh, that's hard. I don't know, honestly. I mean, I feel like any one of us could. I mean, I think we got a good team. The whole infield's, we are pretty solid in the infield and the outfield. I mean, Joe Pro might come out of nowhere. We got a bunch of guys. His brother Nick, Blake, and Will. I mean, our whole defense is pretty consistent within each other. So I feel like I don't really have anyone specifically to throw out there, but I mean, anyone could show up at any time.
Leighton, thanks for your time today. We'll see you out there tomorrow night, and good luck yourself in the Home Run Derby.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And that is Leighton Vander Esch, linebacker. And you're right, Chris. You talk to a lot of people. David Moa was the breakout player last year on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of people think it's going to be Leighton this year.
Yeah, it's crazy to the point. It's like fantasy football at a certain point where everybody's calling one guy to be a breakout. Now you can't get him as a sleeper anymore. Nobody's sleeping on Leighton Vander Esch. We all expect the expectations are there before we've actually seen it happen on the field, which is odd.
Well, today, it seems like yesterday already, it was the top of the show, we talked about, you know, where the yards were going to come, running the ball, receiving the ball, the catches, the touchdowns. Tomorrow we're going to do the same exercise with the defensive side of the ball. A lot of tackles gone.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting to see where we see those get carved up tomorrow. Two real sweet deals coming to KTIK.com this Friday at 9 in the morning. Get off the couch and fly on the trampolines at Circus Tricks Idaho in Nampa. Get three 60-minute flight tickets, and a pair of required grip socks for only $24. And another one, $25, will get you two $25 gift certificates to Pizzle Chick for award-winning pizza, chicken, and salad. Hit KTIK.com at 9 a.m. this Friday to score both of them. Fish, we've got a sports update coming up.
Well, for the second straight offseason, bad news for the first-round pick of the L.A. Chargers. Plus, with the Houston Rockets going up for sale, a former player hopes to swat away the rest of the competition when it comes to purchasing the team. That's coming up next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. It's sponsored by the UIE Tavern. $5 is all it takes for the hippest downtown Boise spot for happy hour. Meet your friends and bring your fives to UIE Tavern Steak and Sea on 11th and Main. Just heard Brett Rippon announce who he's going to have in the Home Run Derby. Four guys in the Home Run Derby. He can hand each one of them his award watch list watches. Just kidding, he doesn't get any watches, but he was named to his fourth preseason watch list today. This time, the Davey O'Brien Award, given to the nation's top quarterback. Also on the watch list for the Maxwell Award, the Warfel Award, and the All-State's Good Hands Award.
When will the Bob Beeler Award be given out?
What does the Bob Beeler Award signify?
We can make one. I mean, there are all kinds of awards
exactly.
out there.
Exactly. The Bob Beeler watch list. Is it for broadcasters or is it for a player who most represents the values of Bob? I think we could do it.
Yeah, I mean,
the players that most represent the values of Bob Beeler. So, Bob, let's do it. Write out the list of values, the things that Bob values in a player.
Not making any stupid mistakes.
Okay, so they got to be smart.
Okay. Not somebody that's going to be too showboaty.
Okay, so this definitely isn't my list, but humility.
Chris will be the one with the best dance.
I want some.
So we'll have the Chris Lewis Award, the Bob Beeler Award.
Yeah, a little different.
Somebody who's great on post-game interviews.
Okay.
Best post-game interview.
Talker.
How about that? Best post-game interview. Because they have awards for everything, right? I mean, the Bob Beeler Award could be whoever's the best post-game interview.
Okay, so we got to figure this out. We got to go through tape and figure it out. Like, Jameis Winston, I remember his freshman year at Florida State, his only year. No, he was there for 2 years at Florida State. You have to be. He was a really good, like, his first post-game interview was a Thursday night game to begin the season, or it might have been a Monday to begin the season, and I remember, like, yo, this dude is a really good talker, really engaging, no cliches. Now, we got to figure out who this is.
I'm going to give you somebody to watch.
Okay, the watch list.
The watch list. Alexander Madison is getting on the watch list for me.
Okay.
Bob Beeler.
I see.
And I was told by Joe Nickel, that if I had been capable of doing the interview that I did last week with Alexander Madison in Spanish, he would have been capable of doing it back. Well, I wasn't capable of doing it in Spanish, so it never went anywhere. But no, Alexander Madison, great interview. Okay. I would put him on my watch list right now.
Speaking of
so he needs to get in the end zone a lot because we want to have him.
Now, speaking of watch list, Crystal, you know another one we can start up?
Which one?
The Chargers first round pick injury watch list.
Okay.
Or actually, we could just call it the they're not going to play for the Chargers this year watch list.
I don't like this because it's sounding a lot like the Sixers. Stop it.
Well, the Chargers don't have much of a future, though.
That's fair.
But last season, Joey Bosa held out. He eventually did play, and now it's being reported by ESPN that first-round pick Mike Williams might need back surgery on a herniated disc that would end his rookie season before it's even begun.
So he will join Ben Simmons.
Yep.
Joel Embiid.
Yep.
Nerlens Noel.
Yep. Markelle Fultz.
No, don't say that.
Are the first three guys actually injured?
Were all those three? Well,
are they injured now?
No.
Oh.
Like, they were all injured their rookie year.
Okay, we're not talking about now. I didn't miss anything while I was gone.
Fultz rolled his ankle and missed, like, summer league. And I was, you know, that's not good.
Hey, just being down in San Diego, no scientific, you know, where you get a cross-section of the population. But, boy, the feeling down there talking to people for the Chargers with don't let the door hit you on the backside.
Yikes.
going out
of here. So yeah, that's at least not the feeling with the Sixers at this point. Yeah, and Fultz's ankle is good, at least.
Are we sure?
Think for now,
it took you about 3 weeks to recover from a rolled ankle.
It could take him 3 weeks. What does he have to do between now and
eat some cheesesteaks?
Chick-fil-A. He's a Chick-fil-A guy.
Oh, that's right, he is a Chick-fil-A guy. Well, speaking of basketball, the Houston Rockets are now up for sale, and former player Dikembe Mutombo told Fox 26 in Houston that he is, quote, working on buying the team, just talking to people who can cut the check and who can make him a part of it. So he's swatting away the rest of the competition.
Ah, there you go. If he is able to get a stake in this, He would need to be on every Rockets promotion commercial because he's awesome in commercials. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one thing about Mutombo. Every commercial he's in, he's a hit.
Now, do you think having picked up Chris Paul, et cetera, makes that team more valuable to try to buy? Do you think people think they're closer to a championship and and maybe would seem more?
Mm-hmm.
I would guess Alexander's the guy's last name that owns the team, right?
Yeah, right? I think so.
Yeah.
He must think maybe strike while the iron's hot. Are you looking like your team's looking good? Maybe more people want to buy it.
Apparently, he's also selling like a lot of his houses that he has, too.
He was the guy that ran out on the court, didn't he, to the referees last year? Yeah.
We're all ready to, like, this dude doesn't need to be owning a team if you think you can just walk out there on the court and start yelling at the ref, man.
Well, we'll end the sports update talking about the Rockets because they look like they're going to be the leading candidates to acquire Carmelo Anthony because Anthony no longer wishes to play in New York. That's according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, who said that Carmelo was told the Knicks, quote, "I want to go to Houston. I am not interested in talking to you about being reincorporated back into this New York roster," end quote.
Can I ask a question? Did the NBA come up with some rule changes for the year? Do we have more than one ball in the game now? Because I see Harden, I see Paul, and if Anthony goes to this team, are you sure that the league didn't change rules that more than one ball can be used at one time?
And two teams would vote for that because the Warriors would approve of that as well.
Yeah, it's funny, though. Like, whenever that's the criticism, I know that they're making the right decision, generally, because great players figure it out. Like, we said the same thing about the Heat. How will all those guys share the ball? And guess what? They figured it out. How will the Warriors have enough shots to go around between Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry? Guess what? They figured it out. So if that's your criticism of the move, then it's probably a move that you should get. That means you have a lot of talented players.
Yes. So will the 76ers have enough injuries to spread around?
No, you know what? They're getting LeBron James. That's the latest because you see LeBron on social media yesterday.
I saw the Ben Simmons googly eye.
Yeah,
tweet.
You saw the googly
eye.
Yeah,
I saw the googly
eye. A little bit later, you saw LeBron James talking about a current Sixer saying, "Congrats to getting on our team." J.J. Redick joining the Uninterrupted Bleacher Report podcast team. J.J. Redick's on the Sixers now. His first guest was Maverick Carter. Maverick Carter and LeBron James like this. I'm telling you.
Redick won't even be there next year. He's on a one-year deal.
Well, it's just, you can. That's why J.J. Redick is here, to get the information, to report back to LeBron. Yo, this is a great place to be, LeBron. So you need to go back and go to the Sixers.
All right, July 19th, 2017. My question, quick answer, Chris, Fish, then me. Where does LeBron play next year?
I would say the Lakers would be the favorite. Then the Sixers.
I'd say the Lakers, hands down.
I don't think he's back with Cleveland.
Yeah, it's funny how like that's almost the upset at this point if LeBron James re-ups with the Cavs.
Join Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. They'll be on location both tomorrow and Friday. Tomorrow, it's Burger and Brew on State Street, and then the Tailgate Sports Bar and Grill, which is located at the entrance of Ann Morrison Park off of Capitol. They'll be there Friday. Both shows, the boys are live from 3 to 6. Join them. It's just a good excuse to hit the bar on the way home. Up next, we've got what we've learned in today's show, both Boise State football as far as the softball, and thoughts from Chris and I on who's going to get all the touchdowns this year. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
And it's time to go over what we learned today on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. It's sponsored by Pram Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories, located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Boise State softball event is tomorrow at the Home Run Derby. We had the two captains on, Brett Rippon and Leighton Vander Esch, announcing their teams. Brett Rippon went first, and this is the four guys he has hitting for the offense in the Home Run Derby.
So I got Brock Barr, Ezra Cleveland, Jake Constantine, and Alec Danens. And, I mean, really it came down to Brock Barr was actually probably the biggest surprise. He showed up to batting practice in jeans and cowboy boots and just started hitting bombs. It was pretty sweet. And then Ezra Cleveland, he was a baseball player in high school, big old dude, probably 300 pounds at this point, and got a pretty nice swing, right-handed swing. Jay Constantine, he was a baseball player in high school, too. He's got a nice little lefty uppercut swing, maybe not the most power, but his plane of the ball should be able to get some out. So I'm expecting big things from him. And then same with Alec Danens. He was in it last year and he did really well. So he was kind of a, he was kind of an in already.
Kind of describes Ezra Cleveland, and the guy that came to my mind is the guy that when he says hit bombs. What about Cecil Fielder? Remember him with the Tigers and the Yankees?
I mean, I don't remember him.
I remember him.
I mean, that guy, Prince.
Right-handed batter, really, really powerful hitter, kind of the same build. 6'6", 304 is what Ezra Cleveland goes. And you talk about a breakout guy. I hear good things about him for the offensive line. So maybe Brett Rypien saying, hey, this guy might be a guy that's going to help me out big time.
You know what? Thinking about that, Brett Rypien should have just chose all offensive linemen. Like, you just got to throw the lineman a bone sometimes. I don't care if you don't win this thing. You might be tanking. You might be having to trust the process. But there's nothing, no better process than making your offensive lineman happy for the season. So I know, Danans and Constantine, Constantine's throwing his backup a bone, but try to help your offensive line out.
You were talking about how maybe he should have taken a look at some of the other guys. I'm thinking that he's pretty smart. He's taking care of guys.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he said Cedric Wilson is the guy to look out for as the player to watch who could win the MVP.
But doesn't a receiver have to take more care of the quarterback than vice versa?
I don't know. I've seen enough Terrell Owens going nuts where it's like, all right, we got to do whatever we can to manage Terrell Owens. Got to do whatever we can to massage the ego of Randy Moss. So that's kind of how I view the quarterback-wide receiver relationship because that's the era that I grew up watching football.
Well, that's the offense. Now we go to the defense. Leighton Van Der Esch, the defensive captain, came on, and he gave his four picks for the Home Run Derby.
Well, we got this one's kind of automatic. We got Mason Smith. I mean, he was a baseball player that everybody's talking about, so hopefully he comes in big for us. And then we got Chase Atada, defensive lineman. He played baseball as well. He's looking pretty good. And Blake Whitlock is third one. He came out of nowhere and kind of surprised me. And so I was kind of glad that he was in it too, because I mean, out of the selection. And the last one's myself.
He picked himself. He ain't even sharing. He's like, I'm the captain and I'm going out there. I'm player coach.
There's two guys I think that have the most pressure on them. Mason Smith. Because he's played professional baseball. You can't go out there and look bad if you've played professionally.
Good point.
And then Leighton for picking himself. He better make the least one round out of this thing, right?
Yeah, you got to absolutely put up numbers if you're the one who made your own selection. It's like selecting myself to the All-Star game. I mean, I think there's kind of heat if you don't perform in the All-Star game. So, Bob, you see the rosters. Who should be the favorite?
In the Home Run Derby or in the other?
Yeah, or off, if we go total home runs, offense versus defense, who would you favorite?
I've never seen anybody swing, so
if you can't pick, then nobody can pick. You have more insight than anybody.
Hey, we haven't sit there and handicapped him. You got to look sometimes at BP. I wasn't paying attention. I was doing interviews last week when I was out there. I should have been sitting there marking him down.
Oh, man.
He's got power to right. He's got power to center. He's got power to right. Left.
You just let me down there. You did not take a side. You didn't pick somebody. You didn't go out on a limb. I will do it then, and I will say the defense looks stronger. Mason Smith, of course, and I don't know. Like, Jake Constantine just looks like a different build than all these other guys. Like, he must really have a great swing, or else all these other guys got some thickness. Like, Constantine is a different type of build, and he might bring the offensive total down. Now, I'm not, and I might get this thrown back in my face if he's out there crushing it, but I like the body type of the defensive players when I'm talking about home runs.
Gary Sanchez upset Giancarlo Stanton.
Yep.
So you never know.
Again, great thing to do tomorrow night starting at 6 o'clock out at Hawks Memorial Stadium. Another good thing coming up is the Country Concert Event of the Summer. It's at the Ford Idaho Center Friday night, August the 4th. Country superstar Jake Owen, Neil McCoy, Cassidy Pope, who you've seen on The Voice, and Drake White will all be there. You can get your tickets now at Jackson's Food Stores and ictickets.com. Jeff Caves in studio. Jeff, you've got a good show today lined up. Dan Hawkins and a former Boise State player. No?
Actually, former University of Colorado, performing at the Live After Five tonight. He started his musical career with Colorado. Hawk actually started mentoring him. He and his group, are they Magic Giants? Is that what they're called? They've been on the Today Show. They've done very well. They're on a tour. They slept at Prater's house last night, which is very concerning.
Uh-oh. You've never been there, right?
What's that?
You've never even been to Prater's house, you were saying, and they've been there?
I don't know what they were doing at Prater's house, but we'll find out. Additionally, the LPGA dress code has been overhauled. Some people against it, some people for it. We'll also preview the British Open and the high school transfer rules. And my own personal persecution, how Southern California banned me from playing high school football for a year. I was a bad person, Chris Lewis, very bad person, expelled for fighting from parochial high school at a very young age. Okay. There's days I wish I could still fight, I'd probably be in jail.
Is there a documentary of the reclamation project that was Jeff Caves?
Enough significant accomplishment. There would be nothing there to reclaim other than I haven't been arrested, so that's probably good. But we'll get to all of that here in just minutes.
I find it fascinating, the high school transfer rule. Chris, you and I were talking about it, about how, you know, hard and fast rules, it's kind of tough to have, but you leave a lot of gray for decision-making in there. It's hard. I think an easy one to approve would be somebody who lives in Boise, family moves to, say, Idaho Falls, has a job over there. You're going all the way across the state. To me, that should be a no-brainer if you move that far away.
Yeah, I just think that there can't be hard set rules because it's a case by case type of situation. Each one is different, and this is how you treat it here in Idaho, where each case is different. So I like that part of it, but it also opens yourself up for inconsistencies and hypocrisy, and that's the risk you have to take.
We carved up the offensive numbers for Boise State today. Tomorrow, we'll divvy up the tackles. That's when Chris and I are back at 1. Caves and Prater up next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.